of Iran's nuclear programme. BBC News.
In an hour, Mariella Frostrup continues open book celebration of funny books and funny writers. First, our new classic serial, Beware of Pity, by Stefan Zweig, with a special introduction from the eminent playwright David Edgar.
Beware of Pity is a touching, perceptive and painfully honest novel about how we deal with the ill. Written by a now largely forgotten Jewish novelist who fled from Austria in 1934, committing suicide in Mexico 7 years later, in despair at the future of European culture. Not surprisingly, Stefan Zweig's novel spoke resonantly to two British writers who would also die before their time. One of the great dramatists of the post-war West End, Simon Gray, read Beware of Pity on holiday, loved it, and began a radio dramatisation which was incomplete at his death in 2008. One of the generation of women playwrights who transformed British theatre in the 80s, and a great radio writer to boot, Claire McIntyre wrote a stage adaptation of the novel, which was not produced in her lifetime. Now the award-winning radio dramatist Stephen Wyatt has adapted Claire's stage version for radio. Here's part one.
Beware of Pity by Stefan Zweig. Dramatized for radio in two parts by Stephen Wyatt. From the stage version by Claire McIntyre. Episode 1.
We are riding to war to avenge the murder of our beloved heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne, His Imperial Highness, Archduke Franz Ferdinand. This should be one of the proudest days of my life, something for which my whole life has been preparing me. Instead, I am fleeing into war as a criminal creeps into the darkness. The last few weeks have been spent in a state of self-loathing, bewilderment, and despair. I'm still only 25. A second lieutenant in the 3rd Regiment of the Imperial Uhlans. But I feel that my life is already over. And yet, the whole thing began with a blunder on my part. An entirely innocent piece of clumsiness. A gaffe, as the French call it.
Company at once! At the truck!
We'd been based in a small garrison town on the Hungarian frontier. Apart from being a stopping place for express trains to Vienna, it was like every other garrison town I've ever known. My family was poor, so I'd no money for fancy outings. The only amusements left me were the cafe or the patisserie, where, since the stakes at cards were usually too high for me, I was reduced to playing billiards or chess, which were much cheaper. So one afternoon, I was playing billiards with the local apothecary, who'd become a friend of sorts. Suddenly the door opened.
That's quite a girl who's just come in.
She's rather attractive, isn't she?
I'd say very attractive.
I think you'll find she's more interested in choosing her coffee and cakes than paying any attention to us.
She must be somebody important. The proprietor can't stop bowing.
You really don't know her?
No? Tell me.
Well, that's Ilona, the niece of Herr von Kekelsfather. Surely you know the Kekelsfathers.
Well, I think I've heard the name.
Herr von Kekelsfather is the richest man in the whole neighbourhood. You must know the house. You can see it from the parade ground. He lives there with his daughter, Edith. The yellow house to the left of the high road with the flat tower and the huge park.
He owns that mansion.
Along with a big sugar factory, a sawmill and a stud farm, as well as 6 or 7 blocks of houses in Budapest and Vienna. Are you surprised we count such colossally rich people among our neighbours?
I'd no idea. Oh, bad luck.
As a matter of fact, I know Herr von Kekelsfather very well. We do business together, and if you were interested, I would be only too happy to get you an invitation to the house. He's always glad to welcome officers.
Well, if it's not too much trouble.
I thought, why not? Anything to relieve the boredom of this stagnant duck pond of a town. Besides, I might get the chance to make the acquaintance of the charming niece. My friend the apothecary wasn't lying. 2 days later, I received a printed card with my name neatly inscribed.
Herr Lajos von Kekersfalva requests the pleasure of the company of Lieutenant Anton Hofmiller at 8 o'clock the following Wednesday. That Wednesday, fate was not on my side. I was delayed by an incident in the barracks, two drunken idiots, which I was required to sort out. Then I had difficulty getting a cab. It was close to 9 before I arrived. Close to, the house was even grander than I had imagined. I felt nervous and flustered as I climbed the steps to the front door. I stumbled my excuses to the imposing butler.
I'm sorry, Please, Lieutenant Hofmiller. I'm sure Herr von Kekersfalva would not want you to feel the least anxiety. Please, come in.
I stood there on the edge of the dancing throng, daunted and confused. No other officers were present, nor anybody I recognized. Then I met the eye of the lovely Ilona.
Fräulein, may I have the honor?
Of course.
She understood my nervousness and put me at my ease. I discovered that she was engaged to a law student in Beskaret, but that didn't matter. Light-hearted, I moved on from Ilona to other partners. I talked, I laughed, I danced, and carried away on the stream of my own happiness. I lost all sense of time. Then suddenly I looked at the clock. I'd been dancing for over an hour, and I remembered that my host had a daughter, and, idiot that I was, I had not yet asked her to dance. She was sitting apart from the throng. She was delicate and slender in a pale blue gown. Thank God, I thought, I've tracked her down. Her eyes looked up as I approached.
Gnädiges Fräulein?
Yes?
May I have the honour of this next dance?
But I...
She stared at me as if she didn't understand.
I said I'd be honoured if you would dance with me.
I...
A shudder passed through her body. She grabbed hold of her chair and attempted to stand. She clung desperately to the heavy tabletop.
I beg your pardon, I...
What did you do?
I just asked her to dance. Please help me, for heaven's sake.
Are you mad? Didn't you see?
See what?
You mean you didn't notice that Aidit is lame?
Lame?
She can't move 2 steps without crutches, and you asked her to dance. I can't believe it. I must go to her.
Please, you must make my apologies. I'd never seen her before this evening. I was only trying to be polite. Please, tell her.
Well, you ruined the whole evening.
Without knowing what I was doing, I stumbled to the door that led into the hall and out of this hellish house. I cannot describe my state of mind as I walked back to the barracks. I realised that I had aggravated my blunder by running away in this cowardly fashion. And I imagined myself disgraced for life, hounded out of society, sneered at by my fellow officers, gossiped about all over town. All because of a stupid blunder. No more than that. I hardly slept. But then, as morning came, I was seized by a consoling thought. I hurried to the flower shop in Rathausplatz, where Herr Gertner was just opening up.
Oh, I thought you soldiers needed your sleep.
We do, but this is very important. It's a very dear friend's birthday. I'd completely forgotten. We'll be riding out in half an hour, so I need to send some flowers right now.
Well, how about these?
Perfect.
Dozen?
No, I'll take them all.
Oh,
yes.
They're not cheap.
That doesn't matter.
Must be a very special friend, then. Shall I send them as they are, or would you like them arranged in a nice basket?
Yeah, in a basket.
It'll cost extra.
That's fine by me.
So, what shall I write on the card?
With sincere regrets.
For a birthday?
No, don't put that. Just send my card with the flowers.
No message?
No, just my card. May I settle up with you later?
Well, I normally like to...
I'd appreciate it, thank you.
Where are the flowers going to?
Oh, sorry. Send them to Villa Kekersfalva. To Aidit von Kekersfalva.
Oh, the Kekersfalvas. Our best customers.
At noon, a letter came. Delicately scented, a coat of arms elegantly embossed on the back.
My sincere thanks, Lieutenant Hofmiller, for the unexpected present of the lovely flowers, which have given me great pleasure. Do please come to tea with us on any afternoon that suits you. Do not trouble to let us know. I am, alas, always at home. Aidit von Kekersfalva.
Lieutenant Hofmiller is here to see you.
Come in. Won't you sit down?
Thank you.
There, draw up the armchair. And why don't you take off your sword? We're going to keep the peace, aren't we? I really must thank you again for the beautiful flowers. Just see how lovely they look.
It was the least I could do.
No, I owe you an apology. It was frightful the way I behaved. I couldn't sleep the whole night. I was so ashamed. You meant it so kindly. How could you possibly have any idea? And besides, you guessed my inmost thoughts. I'm quite crazy about dancing. I can watch other people dancing for hours on end. And then it's not they who are dancing. It's me. Spinning, swaying, letting myself be whirled about. As a child, I was mad about dancing. Well, perhaps it's a good thing for Papa that this happened to me, or else I'd certainly run away from home and become a dancer. Well, I collect pictures of all the great ones. Pavlova, Saharet, Karsavina. I have photographs of them in all their roles and poses. I'm sorry. I'm talking far too much. I'm always this way with strangers.
No, really, it's very interesting.
No, I'd much rather hear about you. Hardly any of the officers from the barracks ever come here, and Ilona tells me you are a very good dancer. So tell me, where did you learn, and who taught you?
With her blunt questions and light, volatile manner, she had a way of focusing attention completely on herself. And, to my surprise, I found myself taking part in a really entertaining conversation.
And for yes, he would tap twice.
Well, I'm not sure I believe you. Horses aren't really that clever.
May I come in?
Oh, of course, Father.
Herr von Keckes, Father.
No, stay where you are. Edith, my dear, Josef tells me that the masseur is here.
Tell him to wait. No, tell him to leave me in peace altogether today. I don't need him.
No, don't you think
honestly, perhaps Lieutenant, it's just my usual daily torture. It's utter nonsense. One, two, up, down, up, down. It's supposed to make me better, but it's quite useless. Just like everything else I've tried.
But, Edith, the treatment is recommended by Dr. Condor, who you know has your best interests at heart,
Oh, very well. I'll go, although it's totally pointless. Excuse me, Lieutenant. I hope you'll come again.
Of course, it's been delightful.
No, on second thoughts, stay with Papa while I march off.
Yeah, here is Josef to help you.
Gnädiges Fräulein.
No, Josef only needs to help me up. After that, I'll walk by myself.
Very good, Fräulein. Allow me. Your crutches, Fräulein.
Yes.
First one foot, and then the other. Between each step there was a faint clanking and squeaking. I did not dare look at her poor legs, but she must have been wearing some sort of mechanical support on her ankles. I knew instinctively why she'd refused to be helped or wheeled out in her invalid chair. She wanted to show me, particularly me, that she was a cripple. Finally, she left the room.
Oh, as if you only knew what that child used to be like. Oh, we were often afraid for her, my late wife and I. She was so reckless, high-spirited, agile. Everything seemed to come so easily to her. Even today, it's easy to make her happy. She can take a childish pleasure in the slightest little thing. But how is she? Oh, how is she to control herself? How can she keep her soul in patience when the whole healing process is so slow and she's done nothing wrong. Never done harm to anybody. Forgive me, Lieutenant. I can't think why I'm bothering you with our troubles. It's only because it just came over me and I wanted to explain. Please don't think badly of her.
Believe me, Herr Kekesfava, I don't. I'm glad she's forgiven me. Goodbye.
Thank you, Father.
Goodbye. And thank you.
I adore riding. The air that morning was marvellous, and I could feel the blood flowing through me in a warm, pulsating, life-giving stream. But then, a thought flashed through my head like a pistol shot. I saw Aedid with her crippled, fettered legs, deprived of all that I was enjoying. Was that when I first started to pity her? "You've made your apologies," a voice said. "No, go and see her once more," urged another. "Then, keep away," came the warning again. A letter from Herr von Keckersfalver decided it. I was invited to dine with them one Sunday. Only men would be present, among them a lieutenant colonel from the War Ministry. Oh, yes, Herr von Keckersfalver knew military men who could aid my career. And, he added, his daughter and Alona would be pleased to see me.
But that's ridiculous.
You can't be serious.
I'm sorry, these soldiers are just Ruthenian peasant lads. This one had never even heard of a post office. When the colonel gave him a letter saying it must go off to Vienna at once, he went straight for his horse and galloped off.
Poor horse.
If we hadn't rung up the next garrison and let them know, the silly fool would have actually done the whole 18 hours ride to Vienna.
I hope he knows what a post office is now.
Apparently, a commonplace, unsophisticated officer like me could make somebody happy. It was hard to believe. So, of course, I was tempted to go back yet again. And there was another reason for going back. From an early age, I'd been brought up exclusively in a male environment. To be able to form a friendship with young women instead was to discover a yearning I didn't even know I had. Of course, Ilona was engaged to her student in Beskaret, waiting for Aedid to get better on a promise of a handsome dowry from her uncle for her marriage. And of course, Aedid could sometimes be difficult and demanding. But these were good times, fueled by Herr von Keckersfalver's discreet generosity. I went whenever I could, which was practically every day. One day it was raining, and Herr von Keckersfalver insisted his chauffeur drove me back home. It happened to be my birthday, so it was a real treat. It was wonderfully luxurious, sitting in this beautiful car, but I still had some discretion left. I asked the chauffeur to drop me in the Rathausplatz, and I walked the rest of the way back to the barracks. I didn't want my fellow officers to see me. But, of course, the next day, in the cafe after riding out, they were on to me anyway.
Good afternoon, Tony. We're over here.
Welcome to our humble hovel, your lordship.
Greetings, Ferenc.
Yoji, may I join you?
If you don't mind slumming. Don't be stupid. You know, Yoji, he's a lad, our Tony. He's dug himself in nicely at the castle. 5 courses every evening, the apothecary tells me. Caviar, spring chicken, real bowls, choice cigars. He's there from tea time to late night drinks with the plutocrat. Yes, we've definitely underestimated our Tony.
The only problem is, he's not much of a pal. He doesn't say to the old buffer up there, "I've got a couple of smart friends, lovely manners, who I'd like to bring along sometime." It's all for him and none for us. Just as well they're not our sort of people.
What do you mean?
Of course, if you could provide us a nice fat cigar, we'll let you off today.
Ah, yes, of course, a cigar. Well, nothing's too good for my friends. But for the moment, you'll have to make do with one of my Egyptian cigarettes here.
Oh, very impressive.
Could you just give that
back? No, wait a minute. Looks like the genuine article to me. Embossed too. What do you think, Yoshi?
Real gold and damned heavy. Hello. An inscription inside. To our dear friend Anton Hofmüller on his 25th birthday, Ilona and Aedid. Well, well.
Dear friend, from Ilona and Aedid. Well, it does really look like you've got your feet under the table. So, what are your plans for this afternoon?
You heading off to the castle as usual?
No. Why do you think that?
Because that's how it's been every day for the last few weeks.
It's as if your friends don't exist.
That's ridiculous.
If you say so.
But it's not like that at all. So, is anybody up for a game of cards?
Oh.
Oh, well.
I played badly and lost money, but what did it matter? I'd made my point. The Kekesfalva household was taking me for granted. Why should I turn up every evening just because they expected it? It wasn't as if I was some masseur or gym instructor who turned up when required. Later that evening, Ferenc and I went for a walk to clear our heads.
You all right?
Of course. Why?
You played very badly, and you looked like you were hating every minute.
That's ridiculous.
Do you know that pretty girl over there?
Why?
She gave you such a glance.
Oh, my God, it's Ilona. Ilona! Ilona, stop!
What do you want?
I just wanted to say hello.
I'm sorry, I'm in a hurry. They're expecting me at home.
Well, they can wait a few minutes, can't they?
No, I really must go.
At least I can escort you to the car.
Of course. So, tell me. Why didn't you come this afternoon?
This afternoon? Oh, it was a silly business. The Colonel wanted to buy a new mount, so we all had to go along and with him and have a look and try it out.
So won't you at least come back for dinner, then?
Oh, I'd love to come, but today's all booked up. We've got a reunion this evening, and I can't cut it. I'm so sorry.
So, are you coming tomorrow?
Tomorrow? Oh, yes, of course.
Good. We'll be expecting you.
As she walked back to the car, I realised I should have sent my regards to her uncle and to Aidit. But I had made my point and asserted my independence. At least they couldn't say that I'd tried to thrust myself upon them.
Ah, Lieutenant Hofmiller, come in. Fräulein von Kekesfalva is upstairs in the tower. She sent word you should go straight up. I'll take you there.
I haven't been up here before.
You'll be astonished how lovely it is. Fräulein von Kekesfalva spends a great deal of time up there. Herr von Kekesfalva had this lift installed especially for her. The views are magnificent. She studies them with her binoculars.
Then I'm being honoured by an invitation up there.
That is correct, Lieutenant. Please, you are expected.
The building had already aroused my interest, and standing on the terrace, I understood its attraction for Aidit. Her private hideaway. And the views were magnificent. Our barracks was clearly visible. Had she, I wondered, ever watched me riding out from up here? I looked around, but there was no sign of Aidit. And then I realised that the broad back of a wicker chaise longue had concealed her from me. When I approached, I saw that she was asleep. The lips breathed gently, but even this tiny effort caused her thin, childish breast to rise. The shadows under her eyes, the blue veins visible under her pale white skin, showed just how fragile she was.
Oh, it's you. How stupid of me. I must have dozed off. Why didn't you wake me straight away? You shouldn't stare at a person who's asleep. It's not done. They always look ridiculous. Why didn't you come yesterday? There must have been some special reason for letting us sit and wait for you. You could at least have rung.
Well, the Colonel wanted us all to...
Yes, yes, Ilona told me all that. And how did the touching story of the inspection end? Did the Colonel buy the horse after all?
Well, he still wasn't sure he'd...
Let's have an end to these ridiculous lies. Not a word of what you're telling me is true. At six, you were sitting in the cafe playing cards. Our chauffeur happened to see you there.
I don't know what to say.
I'm not afraid of telling the truth, you see. And I'll tell you why our chauffeur was there at that time. I sent him there. And then I asked Ilona to go and find out why you were treating us with such scant courtesy. I was worried I might have offended you. You see, I'm not ashamed to admit all this to you, even though it doesn't put me in a very good light.
You mustn't feel...
So please, no more lies. I can't take any more. Every day I'm stuffed so full with them I feel sick. How well you're looking today, and how splendidly you're walking. You really are much, much better. It's suffocating. So why can't you just tell me straight out that you had no time to come yesterday and no inclination?
Because I don't want you to think.
We haven't taken out a subscription on your company. I know that. And nothing would have pleased me better than if you'd rung up and left a message to say you weren't coming because you were going to have a good time with your friends. And do you think I'm so stupid that I can't understand that you're bound to get bored here playing the Good Samaritan?
I don't get bored here. I enjoy...
Enough lies! I'm fed up to the teeth with them. You know, a few days ago, we engaged a new charwoman. And the first day she was here before she'd talked to anyone, she saw me being helped across to an armchair on my crutches. She dropped her scrubbing brush in horror and screamed, "Oh, Lord Jesus, that rich young lady, she's a cripple." All alone, I was all for sacking her on the spot. But I liked it. And the woman's horror did me good because it was honest and human. I gave her 10 crowns and she went off to church to pray for me. And you're no different from her. You're horrified as well, except you try to hide it.
Nothing could be further from the truth.
I've seen your eyes, and I've no doubt you feel very pleased with yourself for giving up a couple of hours to cosset the poor invalid. But I don't want your sacrifices, and I don't want your pity. If you want to come here, then come, and if you don't, don't. Just don't try and lie to me. Well, I'm glad I got that off my chest. I've been meaning to say it for some time. Look, let's not talk any more about it. Give me a cigarette.
Here. Please.
Thank you.
Here, let me light it for you.
What's the matter? Your hands are trembling. What? I haven't upset you with my stupid prattle, have I? Papa is right. You really are a very strange person.
Edith, I'm afraid it'll soon be too chilly for you up here. Perhaps you'd like to change for dinner? Yusuf is here with your chair.
Fräulein? Mm.
In the meantime, maybe Lieutenant Hofmüller and I could take a little stroll in the garden. Yes. Lieutenant Hofmüller, I want to ask you a great favour.
Of course.
No, hear me out. You scarcely know us, and of course you'd have every right to refuse. But you were, I felt it straight away, a good man. Yeah, a man always ready to lend a helping hand. Besides, it's not a very big thing I want to ask of you, but, sorry, I'm rambling.
Please, tell me what you want me to do.
You know, when Edith's troubles began 5 years ago, I had no idea it would last so long. Oh, how could one imagine that one day a child would be running about like other children and then all of a sudden it should be over forever? I would never understand why. So cruel. I'm not a good man. I've done many wicked things in my life. Why not punish me? But no. God struck at the young and innocent.
But there is hope of a cure.
So we try to believe. Of course, I've made inquiries of every possible doctor. Wherever there was a famous doctor to be found, I got him to come here and examine Edith. And they came and they held forth and they talked Latin and held consultations. One tried one thing and one another. They said they hoped, and they trusted, and they took their fees and departed. And things were left just where they were. Well, some small improvements, I suppose, but no cure. They all shook their heads and counseled patience. 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 Only one doctor has ever persevered with her. Just one. Dr. Condor. Have you ever heard of him by any chance?
I'm afraid I haven't.
Well, yeah, why should you? You're in perfect health, and Dr. Condor is not somebody who throws his weight about. He's not interested in ordinary cases, only the severe cases that other doctors give up with a shrug of the shoulders. Uneducated as I am, I can't say definitely that Dr. Condor is a better doctor than other doctors. I only know he's a better man. I got to know him first when my wife was ill, and I saw how he fought for her life. He was the only one who refused to give up hope until the very last. He has... I don't quite know how to put this. A kind of passion to get the better of an illness.
You trust him?
Totally. In fact, I know he actually feels guilty if he fails in what he set out to do. He promised a woman who was going blind that he'd put her right. And then when she really did go blind, he married her. Imagine. She was 7 years older than him, not beautiful, without any money, an hysterical creature, in fact, who's done damage to his career. I'm happy to have found him. If anybody can help Edith, Dr. Condor can.
You said you wanted to ask me a favour.
Oh. Yes, indeed. I told you how sympathetic Dr. Condor is, and... Well, I'm always afraid that out of consideration for my feelings, he won't tell me the whole truth. Whenever I ask point blank how long Edith's cure will take, he's evasive and he tells me to be patient. But I'm an old sick man. And I must know if I shall live to see her recover. I can't go on like this.
But what do you want me to do?
Tomorrow, Dr. Condor is coming again from Vienna. He comes every 2 or 3 weeks to see how things are going. He'll examine Edith in the afternoon. He'll stay to dinner as usual, and then he will go back home by the night express. Now, it occurred to me that maybe if someone were to ask him casually, a complete stranger who had nothing to do with the whole thing, if this person were quite casually to ask him, just as an acquaintance, whether the girl would ever be cured at all, quite cured, I mean, completely cured, and how long it would take. I have a feeling he wouldn't lie to you. He's no need to spare your feelings. Will you do this for me?
How can I refuse?
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you. I knew you were the man to ask him for me. And nobody will ever know. Not Edith or Ilona or the doctor himself. It'll be a secret between us. Only I shall know what a tremendous service you have done for
but
me.
But it's no trouble at all.
No, no, it is a very great service. And if ever I can do anything for you...
I don't expect anything in return.
I know you don't. But I have good connections in various ministries, including the war ministry. That's all I meant. It might be better if we were to return to the house now. Or Edith would be wondering why we've been away so long. One has to be terribly on one's guard with her.
As arranged, I came to dinner the next evening. Dr. Condor was there, having completed his investigation of Edith.
Lieutenant Hofmiller, Dr. Condor.
How do you do, Lieutenant?
Who knows what I expected after Herr von Kekesfalver's eulogies. He was a stocky, plump man, short-sighted, bald, and badly dressed.
I was profoundly disappointed.
I'm very much looking forward to my supper. With all this rushing about, I didn't manage a bite of lunch. And our host's chef is excellent.
I'm sorry the dish was being difficult earlier.
Believe me, we doctors are not so fond of obedient good patients as you might think. They are the ones who least help us to help them. So-called difficult patients are much keener to get better.
The food was, as usual, excellent. Edith was irritable and her father painfully anxious, but between us, Ilona, the doctor and I, kept some sort of conversation going.
Well, I'll just finish this cigar and then I'll be off.
Oh, so soon?
My dear friend, I have to.
Shall I send for the car?
No, it's better for me if I walk.
I'd be happy to accompany you to the station.
Thank you, I'd like that. Poor Kekesfalva. I know I was brusque, but he'd happily keep me there for hours asking 101 questions, or rather the same question 100 times over. But there's only so much a doctor can take. Truth is, I can't let him know how bad things are.
You mean Edith is in a bad way?
Edith? I'm not talking about Edith. Her condition is stationary. That's unfortunate, but she's stable. Yeah, it's Kekesfalva I'm worried about. I don't know how well you know him.
I've only known him for a few weeks.
Well, it's been painful to see his deterioration. He used to be energetic and ruthless, which is why he's so rich. Now he's literally worrying himself to death. I'm afraid the old man's not long for this world.
That's terrible.
No doubt you've heard the stories about him and his shady past.
I'd no idea.
Well, it doesn't matter now. Now he's just a frightened, sick old man with a crippled daughter.
I like them both very much.
I can see that. 11:15. My train doesn't go until 1:20. We still have 2 full hours. It's just that I couldn't bear to spend them with the Kekesfalvas. Maybe you know somewhere we could go and have a quiet drink?
There's a bar in the station.
I think there's going to be a thunderstorm.
I think so too.
Your good health.
Yours. Again.
Oh, I'm glad of your company. All this is very stressful. I'm fond of Herr von Kekesfalva, but I can only spend so much time with him in his endless question.
So, please, tell me, Doctor, I'm only a layman. I like the family, but I don't know them all that well. Can I ask, is this paralysis of Edith's a passing illness, or is she incurable? I mean, you told her father tonight that before supper that you'd seen a change in her.
Well, no doubt of it.
So?
Oh, please, don't be like Herr von Kekesfalva, who hangs on my every word. But yes, I do believe there's been a change, and for the better. Somehow she seemed in much better spirits. I can't put my finger on why, but it could well be a good sign.
So you felt positively about it?
Please don't put words into my mouth. I would only go so far as to say that it could be a good sign.
My apologies.
It always comes down to that simple little question which is impossible to answer. I try whatever I can with Edith in the hope that something will work. I increase the weights on her legs. I alter the program of her exercises. I recommend another course of electric baths. I monitor her progress and eagerly await improvement. But I am afraid to say I have yet to see any. But I will never use the word incurable. Every illness which is now curable was once incurable. I watched my father die of diabetes. People no longer die of diabetes. I will never answer the wretched question, because for me, any so-called incurable illness is an illness for which there is not yet a cure.
But you have helped her.
Have I?
Herr von Kekesfalva told me how refreshing she found the electric baths, and especially since the injections which she had.
Which, frankly, achieved nothing.
But she can walk a little, thanks to your apparatus and your stretching appliances. And she's really quite...
Swindle. They help me, not her. They are toys to keep her quiet and to keep the old fool's endless stream of questions at bay. It gives them the appearance of progress, when I know none is really being made. The weights may strengthen her sinews a little, which is, of course, desirable, essential. But they're not the answer. nor are the electric baths, or any of the other mumbo-jumbo. They are not going to cure spinal paralysis. They do no more than give me time and make Aided feel better because something's being done. That's all there is to it.
Will you have another?
No, my dear chap, my train is due very soon and I've drunk quite enough. I apologise. I think I may have completely destroyed your conception of the good doctor, the helper of mankind and fount of all truth.
I appreciate your honesty.
Oh, please, rest assured, I haven't given up. Extraordinarily enough, I was reading an article only a few days ago in a Parisian medical journal, a description of a treatment of a case of paralysis, a very curious case. A 14-year-old boy had been bedridden for 2 years, unable to move a limb. Professor Viennot managed to effect such an improvement in the boy's condition that in 4 months' time, he could climb 4 flights of stairs with ease. And the case seems very similar to Edith's.
Well, that's incredible.
Can you imagine how that made me feel? He'd managed in a few months to achieve what I've been trying to do for 5 years. I've written off to him and eagerly await his account of the exact details of the case. So far, the etiology and methods employed are not clear to me, so I can form no idea of whether his methods might be practicable in our case. But there may, perhaps, be some hope for us in this new treatment.
Do you think, then, that she...
I think nothing. There is no then about it. There are no miracle cures. I'm not in telephonic communication with the Almighty, and I have pronounced no opinion whatever. I promise you nothing.
Did he realise that I was there to investigate on Herr von Kekke's father's behalf? I cannot be sure, even now.
Many thanks for your company. The time has passed more quickly than it would otherwise have done. I think you'd better hurry back. The storm is going to break with a vengeance.
Dr. Condor wasn't wrong. It was a pig of a night. The little park in front of our barracks lay in complete darkness, but I had a sense that someone was lurking in the bushes. Who's there?
It's only me, Lieutenant.
Oh, for God's sake. Herr von Kekkersfeller, what are you doing here? It's raining cats and dogs. You should be in bed.
I'm sorry. I couldn't sleep.
Where's your car?
Over there. Waiting for me.
It's something. You really ought to get out of this rain. You'll catch pneumonia.
Yes, yes, of course, but I have to know. What did he say?
Who?
Well, Dr. Condor, you spoke to him, didn't you?
Yes, but I mean, you've been waiting all this time to hear what he said.
Of course. Did you manage to talk to him about Edith?
He's just gone in his train, but yes, we talked at length.
At length? What did he say?
He was very optimistic.
Oh, optimistic?
Yes, he was distinctly positive.
Positive?
He mentioned a professor in Paris who's had some remarkable results with a case similar to Edith's.
Remarkable results?
Let me take you to your car. I'll tell you more tomorrow.
But it sounds as if we might be talking about a cure. A real cure.
It seems that this French doctor has effected an extraordinary recovery in a boy of 14.
You mean the boy was cured?
That was my impression of what Dr. Condor said.
Completely cured?
It would seem so. Possibly, probably.
That's wonderful news!
Where is your car? Hmm? You shouldn't stay out in this downpour.
I can't believe it. A cure. Oh, thank you. Thank God! A cure!
In his frenzy of gratitude, he seized my hand and kissed it. I wondered about what I had done. But I was tired out, and that night slept well. The next day, the weather was perfect for manoeuvres. Riding as part of a column of cavalry, you cease to exist as a separate entity. As I rode along, I felt, after all the stress of the last few weeks, suddenly buoyant and carefree.
Good afternoon, Lieutenant. It's good to see you. The young ladies are waiting for you in the drawing room.
The old butler couldn't stop smiling. He ushered me eagerly into the house without any of his usual obsequious impersonality. What was the matter with him?
Lieutenant Hofmiller.
Oh, Lieutenant, come in.
At last. We've been waiting for you for ages, haven't we, Elena?
Indeed. It's all so exciting.
Sit down, please. Now, Be quick and tell me everything, everything, mind. Oh, Papa, I've got everything so mixed up that I didn't know where I was.
Oh, you know what he's like when he gets excited? He was laughing too. That's not like Uncle.
So, tell us what this new cure is. What did Dr. Conder say to you?
What did he say? Mm. Well, you know already. There's some new treatment and he's very optimistic about it. I don't really know the details, but I'm quite sure you can trust the doctor to put things right.
I always knew the present treatment was useless. I mean, all this business of massage and electrical treatments and surgical appliances.
Oh, she took off all those silly appliances this morning, you know, without waiting for the doctor.
I can't imagine what a relief it was. I feel better already. So, tell me quickly, what is this French professor's treatment? Am I going to have to go away to have it done? I loathe those sanatoriums. And what's more, I can't bear the sight of invalids. But if it has to be done, then of course I'll do it. So don't just sit there. Tell us the whole story. When is he going to start and how long is it supposed to take?
Well, Dr. Condor only talks of the treatment in general terms. It's achieved excellent results, but every case is different, and so it's not really possible to say anything definite for the moment.
Oh, that's just Dr. Condor. He's always terribly overcautious. But once he's made even a half promise, you can bank on his keeping it. And if I were told it could take another 6 months, or even a year, good, I'd say. I'll see it through and do what's expected of me.
Oh, but thank God we've at least got to this stage.
Yes, I already feel the worst is behind.
I'm very glad.
Oh, you can't imagine how light-hearted I feel. As if only now am I beginning to live. Oh, and guess what?
I don't know. What?
This morning, we drove into town, and I'm going for a drive every day now because I don't care what people say and think. Oh, and tomorrow we're going to have a special treat. We're driving out to the stud farm and we're having a picnic.
Yes.
And I'm taking some sugar lamps to feed the horses. Oh, don't forget to tell the cook to pack them.
Oh, yes, of course, I will.
Oh, it's 5 years since I've done something like this. And, well, of course, you must come too.
Well, that's very kind, but I...
Don't be silly, you must come.
Of course, we're not going to let you off.
Oh, you must come, Lieutenant. We simply won't let you off.
Had I said too much?
We won't take no for an answer.
Ought I to prick the bubble of this dangerous optimism? But then I thought, these lies, or rather half-truths, are born of pity. They've made her happy. And can it ever be a crime to make someone happy?
Telegram for you, Lieutenant.
Thank you. It could only be bad news if it had to be told in such a hurry. Am asked visit Kekesfalva tomorrow, stop. Meet me station bar 5 o'clock. Condor.
Well, Lieutenant, I've been bombarded with telegrams from Edith and her father, peppered with words like earliest opportunity and greatest impatience, which made me think something's in the wind. That's why I wanted to see you. Then this morning I received confirmation, an interminably long express letter from Edith saying she knew I was the only person who could save her, and she would without fail carry out any treatment I could prescribe, but could we start as soon as possible, please? I think I know what's happened. Somebody must have chattered either to the old boy or his daughter about Professor Viennot's cure, and that somebody can only be you.
I'm sorry,
I'm not blaming you. We're both to blame. I should never have talked to you at all, and when I did, I should most certainly have been more cautious. It isn't your business to treat the sick.
Well, I had no idea that Herr von Kekesfava would tell his daughter that he'd take it so seriously.
I'm sure he pressed you and then beseeched you to tell him more. I know what he's like. The problem is that invalids and their relatives translate what they are hearing, so perhaps becomes certainly. And if you said, as I'm sure you did, a possible cure, he never heard the word possible.
Well, I can't remember exactly what I did say. He was so desperate to hear what I had to say, but Maybe I made the cure sound more certain than I should. I suppose I must have done that. But I never meant to.
Even I would have found it an impossible situation. That's why I decided not to tell him anything until I was in possession of all the facts. Unfortunately, now I am. Vienno's treatment cannot be applied in Adid's case.
Not at all?
No. His cures have been effective in cases of disease of the spinal cord arising out of tuberculosis, where the motor nerves can be made to function perfectly again. In Adid's case, where the central nervous system is affected, all the methods employed by Vienno, lying motionless in a steel corset, the use of sun rays, a special system of remedial exercises, are of no use.
Oh, my God.
To expect the poor child to endure all that elaborate treatment would be to torture her quite needlessly. So, now you know how thoughtless you've been in buoying up her hopes.
But I only meant to act for the best. If I said something to Keke's father, it was only out of...
Out of pity? Out of the best possible motives?
I couldn't just leave somebody in despair. Surely there was no harm in my trying to...
But there was a very great deal of harm. Frankly, it'd have been better if you'd remained totally indifferent. You see, I believe there are two kinds of pity. The first, the weak and sentimental kind, is really no more than human impatience to get rid as quickly as possible of the painful emotions caused by the sight of another's unhappiness. The other kind is unsentimental and creative. It's determined to hold out in patience and forbearance to the very limit of its strength and even beyond. This is the only kind of pity which is of any value. I don't wish to be unkind. Your feelings got the better of you. It can happen to anyone. But from now on, we must act as one. No more going behind my back.
Believe me, I never intended...
Recriminations are over. I will take full responsibility when I tell the Kikisfalvas the truth. Only, I can't leave you entirely out of the picture. Otherwise, he'll endlessly quote you in order to delude himself into thinking that despite everything, there's some hope.
But couldn't we... Couldn't we delay telling her for a few days, maybe weeks?
And what would that achieve?
You should have seen her yesterday. She was like a different person. She wasn't scared or cowed. She wasn't reluctant to be seen. In all the time that I've been visiting her, she's never been like that. She was happy. That happiness can't be bad, can it? It seems wrong somehow to take it away so quickly.
Your idea isn't altogether a bad one. I had a similar thought myself when I received her letter. Why not make use of her belief in a new cure? It'd be easy to manage. I could send her to the Engadine Clinic, where she's been before, and leave her in the blissful belief that we were trying out a new treatment when in reality it would be the old one.
Well, I don't understand these things very well, but really, do you think if her spirits remain buoyant, there might be... some real improvement?
At the start, no doubt, we would see considerable progress. But what about the weeks after, when the complete recovery which she's been counting on doesn't happen? How can we expect her ever again to have confidence in me, in any other doctor, in any other human being, when she realizes she's been so deliberately deceived? I could never take responsibility for such dissimulation with a clear conscience. Think it out for yourself. Would you have the courage in my place?
Yes. Yes, I would. Then, once she's made some progress, I'd let her know the state of affairs. Doctor, you haven't had the opportunity of seeing the transformation which this new hope has brought about in her. She's going out. She's enjoying picnics. She... Doesn't any invalid need something to hold on to? I do believe there's a real chance of improvement. Tell her the truth, yes, but only... when she's able to bear it.
But when? And who is to tell her? Would you take on yourself such a responsibility?
Yes. I will take on the responsibility fully and entirely. I know for certain it will do Adit good to be left in hope that her troubles are coming to an end. If it becomes necessary to tell her that I have perhaps promised too much, I shall frankly acknowledge my responsibility, and I am convinced she will understand.
My God, you're taking on a hell of a lot. Well, if you're serious, that puts a new complexion on the whole thing. In that case, we might risk waiting a few days until her nerves are in a better state.
Thank you.
I shall tell the Kekesfalvas that Bieno's method has by no means been tried out. I shall point out emphatically that they must not expect a miracle. If they buoy themselves up with illusory hopes, it will be for you to put the whole business straight in good time. Can I absolutely rely on your not letting me down?
Absolutely.
Goodbye, Lieutenant. I count upon you if any kind of crisis should arise as a result of her being disappointed. Let's allow the child to live in hope a few weeks longer, and if she does make any real progress, then it'll be you who've helped her, not me. And if not, well, let's not think about that just now.
This is the good kind of pity.
I sincerely hope so.
If I die in this war, I no longer care. Beware of pity. That's all I've learned. That's all I know. Because pity can destroy lives.
In Beware of Pity, the part of Anton Hofmiller was played by Piers Wehner. Edit, Bryony Hanna. Kekesfalva, Ronald Pickup. Dr. Condor, Jasper Britton. Josef, Michael Jaston. Ilona, Mabel Clements. Ferenc, Jack Chedburn. Yoji, Ty Lawrence. The Apothecary, Jason Devoy. Stefan Zweig's Beware of Pity was dramatized for radio by Stephen Wyatt, from the stage version by Claire McIntyre. The director was Jane Morgan. It was a peer production for BBC Radio 4.
And you can hear episode 2 next week at the same time. In a couple of minutes, Mariella Frostrup continues open book celebration of amusing writing.
Hello. Have you got a moment? You know, I've heard some very unsettling stories recently. Stories about lost souls who stalk the objects of their desire with quite remarkable tenacity.
Let's find your parents.
I told you, they've gone. It's just me and him now.
Stories about the transformative powers of love charms and an enthusiastic employee who was asked to give of his all, quite literally.
What's going on?
What's going on?
You've locked me in.
I really think you should hear them too.
The new series of The Man in Black, starring Mark Gatiss, begins this evening at 6. Over on BBC Radio 4 Extra.